Hello, and welcome to the Films You'd Forgotten podcast with me, the host, Adam Richmond. Joining me, as ever, my reliably scatterbrained cohort in reminiscence, Joseph Devine.
Hello there.
This is the podcast in which we chew over the films we forgot we'd even seen, with digressions aplenty. Today, we're casting our minds way back to 2012's Life of Pi, directed by Ang Lee. Adapted from the book of the same name, it tells the outlandish tale of an Indian lad, the titular Pi, who ends up shipwrecked with a hyena, zebra, orangutan, and most unfortunately, a Bengal tiger. Turns out it's all very allegorical, but boy, what a spectacle there is along the way. I think I know now why I forgot this film. It's because I didn't speak to anyone about it. I watched it, I kind of thought it was a bit stupid, never spoke about it, and swiftly crossed it off the old bonds. I would never have spoken about it because it's about things I've got no interest in. It's about religion, it's about faith, it's about allegory. I hate allegories, you know. Just tell me the story, yeah? Don't use symbols.
Adam is the host now. The dynamic works better when Adam is the host. Adam prefers to be the host, and Joe prefers to be the participant. It's better overall when Adam is the host, and Joe is the participant. Let it never be spoken of again. The ghost. 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 The ghost.
You know what? When it started, I was thinking, oh, this is really solid. I can't believe I forgot this. The first half an hour, it's got this great actor in called Irfan Khan. He's fantastic. He's in this lovely film called The Lunchbox, which I would heartily recommend. But he's so good in this film.
Yeah, and he's really good in this. I really liked him.
His narration is wonderful. And then, unfortunately, after about 40 minutes, his narration is swapped in for the young Pi. I was questioning the creative decision there, given Irfan Khan's, you know, giving heft to some real drivel. But yeah, and then sort of the main film kicks in, and I swiftly remembered why I'd forgotten it.
That's interesting how we watch films differently, because I didn't even notice that the narration had swapped, and I don't think I ever would have noticed that or known that if you hadn't said it. I think I agree with you, the first 30 minutes of this film is extremely strong, and that basically just wins me over completely, so much so that I don't notice anything bad after that. I really liked it, and I think now that we're talking about it, I definitely won't forget it. I will, because of my memory issues, but if I was an ordinary person, I don't think I'd forget it. Such did I enjoy it.
I mean, did you remember what ostensibly the twist was?
No. And also, I mean, I can't remember, I wasn't really listening to you in your intro. Did you tell people what happens in the film?
Yeah, I mean, I can read it again. I said
a quick reminder, because people might have seen it in the past and not rewatched it.
I did. But, I mean, I introduced it. I said a boy gets shipwrecked on a boat with some animals.
Sure, you are. But yeah, what I mean is the end, though.
Yeah, you told me to keep my synopses as brief as possible. And now you're telling me, ooh, add in some more. I mean, I can't win.
No, but in this sense, we're going to talk about the we're going to talk about the ending, aren't we? So might as well just recap it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the ending, it just turns out that he's telling this story, and he's chosen to sublimate a very traumatizing event and turn the human characters that he was actually with on this boat into animals. You know, it's revealed, oh, actually the hyena was the chef, and the orangutan was his mum, and the zebra was one of the other chefs. It doesn't really matter. They're just humans.
One of the other seamen, yeah. I think the Buddhist seamen.
Right. I was watching it, and I knew that. Watching the hyena eat the zebra, knowing it's a human animal, human eating another human.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, God, this is impossible, because I know what the end is. I remember thinking that that end reveal being really, really hastily done and being quite dissatisfied. But that whole bit, the hyena, orangutan, zebra bit, is basically done in 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's pretty quick.
So the reveal that that's a kind of allegorical is it takes up the same amount of screen time as it actually took up, because then the rest of the film it's all tiger, and the tiger, you know what's the who's it, the tiger was real in the zoo, but then is the tiger's like represents his like loads of things throughout the film. It kind of changes. Yeah. Like some points it's his dad, sometimes it's his like the evil side of him and his anger and rage
and his courage.
But then he's sort of saying things like, "Oh, if Richard Parker wasn't here, if I didn't have him to take care of, I would have died." So it was like, "Well, is that the real tiger? Is the real tiger there?" I don't know. It's just so annoying. It just kept like cramming in all this stuff.
We really had different experiences with this.
I found like this film is, it wants to appeal to everyone, and therefore it appeals to everyone.
Oh. I thought you were going to repeat the dad thing.
Yeah, no, yeah. I wanted to say no one, but I think this does appeal to everyone because it's the Coldplay of a film. You know, it's this is the perfect time to play the game. I've got a great game.
Do you mind if I interrupt you before we play the game? I just want to say that I like the film. I feel compelled every time you say something bad about it to say something nice about it. I really liked it a lot.
Okay, but this isn't a balance, okay? And this is not a film review, and this isn't like, oh, my opinion's better than yours. All you can say is you like the film. You know, whoop-de-doo. I can explain why it's shit and, you know, of not of very little interest. You know, you can't explain why it's good. You just liked
it. I can.
No, you can't.
Well, I can't explain why it's good to you, but I can explain why it was good for me.
You know, I'm being facetious.
Oh, yeah, I know you are. Let me tell you something, though, okay? I don't know what's happened to me in the last 2 or 3 years, but I can't watch films now and not get sad about really basic stuff. It's really basic stuff that when I was, you know, in my 20s, watching these films, I would think, oh, you know, this is, why would anyone be sad about this? It's so po-faced, or it's so overtly done. You know, everyone's got a dead kid, or, you know, you're in a bad relationship, or, you know, something like that. I'm literally at the age now where I re-watch films I've seen several times before as a younger person, and I cry at things that I never even thought were remotely sad before. In this film, the boy loses his family. It's so sad, Adam. It's so sad. And then with Richard Parker, the tiger, when the tiger's walking off at the end and he doesn't look around, and they've shared a thing, you're looking through the eyes of the animal to see the soul. I mean, I was moved by this film. I think it's going to stay with me.
I mean, that's fantastic. That's, you know, it's great that there are fans of really broad, obvious, emotionally manipulative films, because that's what you know, these are the films that win the Oscars, and these are the films that people will chat about in the office around the water cooler,
yeah,
and say how they felt feelings that they never knew they had.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
yeah.
nice that you're feeling feelings. It's because you're growing up and you're living life. And listen, we've got to get onto this game because it ties into all this.
Okay, what's the game?
It's a quote game, okay? And so the question is, which of these is an inspirational quote that features on a tea towel, and which is a quote that features from this film?
Okay.
Yeah? Do you get what I'm saying here?
I understand instantly where you're going. I feel like I'm going to win this game.
Yeah, I think you are too, but, you know, you have just watched it. But I'm also banking on your shit memory.
Yeah, I appear to remember it being really good, so it is possible I'll get this game wrong.
Okay, here we go. The lower you are, the higher your mind will want to soar.
Have I got to say now whether that is from the film or from a tea towel?
Yeah, well, fucking of course you do.
That's from a tea towel.
Wrong, mate. That's from the film.
Don't remember that. When do they say that? Do you remember when they say that?
No.
What is it? The lower you are, the higher your soul will want to soar.
Your mind will want to soar.
Your mind. I don't find that. Generally, I find the lower I am, my mind wants to shut down or do basic things, simple things.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point, again, of why the film doesn't, you know, it has these kind of soundbite truisms, and then you scratch the surface and there's nothing there.
Yeah.
A loving heart is the truest wisdom.
A loving heart is the truest wisdom. Is that from a tea towel?
Yeah, that's from a tea towel. Well done.
Okay. I was hoping they were all going to be from the film, and I was going to say tea towel every time.
No, I'm not going to. It's not that kind of game. You can't cross the sea merely by standing and staring at the water.
Oh, this could be one you're tricking me with. I'm going to say this was in the film.
Tell.
Oh, mate, you did trick me with that. Because you made it about the sea, and this film has the sea in it.
Okay. The meaning of life is to find your gift. The purpose of life is to give it away.
That's got to be a tea towel.
Oh, yeah, well done.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would have remembered that. That's quite a good one, isn't it? Concise.
Yeah, it's nice. Faith in God is an opening up, a letting go, a deep trust, a free act of love. But sometimes it is so hard to love.
Yeah, this has to be from the film, because there's so many scenes in the film where the main character talks about giving him pie. I need to call him pie. Pie talks about giving himself over to God, and why are you still punishing me? Those sorts of things.
That's very good. Yeah, that was from the film.
Yeah, great.
Okay. So that's what I did. I stayed alive. I kept breathing, even though there was no reason to hope. And all my logic said that I would never see this place again. So that's what I did. I stayed alive. I kept breathing. And I know what I have to do now. I've got to keep breathing. Because tomorrow the sun will rise. Who knows what the tide will bring?
Tea towel.
That's from the film Castaway.
Excellent.
Yeah,
excellent.
That was the curveball.
Did you watch Castaway?
No, not yet. I will do. Okay, just a few more. Only from your heart can you touch the sky.
That's a tea towel. That's not in this film.
That's a tea towel.
Yeah, come on, man. Is the bar's too low for that one?
Yeah, all right, okay. I think that would fit in the film. Basically, every time I read a tea towel, what I'm thinking is, this would slot beautifully into this wonderful film.
I think that's partly your failing, but give me one more.
A castaway's worst mistake is to hope too much and do too little.
That's from the film, and I believe that's from the book that he's reading that he finds in the lifeboat about how to survive at sea.
Yeah, well done. You got that one.
It would be weird if that was on a tea towel.
It would, wouldn't
it? It's quite out of context.
It is.
The tea towel was on a lifeboat.
Indeed. And so it goes with God. Anyway, that was my game because, you know, I find... Oh, actually, no, wait. There's one more.
There's one more?
One more. Mm-hmm. Live, life, love, and a glass of Prosecco.
Yeah, I remember that scene. Yeah. Great bit of the film. Lovely bit.
Lovely bit of the film. Yeah. What have you got for me?
Yeah, I've got something for you. I've got something really good, what I think is really good for you. Can you guess the date this book was released, Adam?
I'm going to say 9/11.
Did you already know that?
No, because what other fucking date would it possibly be?
9/11. Don't you think that's interesting that this book was based on 9/11? Released, not based on 9/11. It was released on 9/11.
No, I don't think. I know we're supposed to do yes and on this podcast.
I think it is. I think it is interesting. I'm not saying it's. I know it's a coincidence. I'm not saying.
I'm glad it's a coincidence.
I'm just saying it's interesting that it was released at that time because the book is all about fantasy, isn't it? It's a complete fantasy as described already. Nothing that really happens in the book is clear. I think basically a world in which you can't trust what's true and what isn't true. Is a post 9/11 world, like the political world in which we currently live, moves more and more to a place that is similar to what I'm describing. And I just think it's interesting, therefore, only symbolically, that the book was released on that day.
I'm really surprised at how open-hearted you are, because this is just. Do you buy into this worldview about faith and religion and God and belief and the idea that you have to suffer? One of the quotes. Oh yeah, this is my favorite. This was my favorite quote actually, and I didn't read it out. Here we go. They're talking about this is the beginning of the film, and Pi says he's kind of defending why he's a Catholic, he's a Jew, and he's a Muslim.
A Hindu, I think.
He's into all of them. And he talks about, again, like this is a real crowd pleaser. He's like, oh, all religions are good. God's everywhere. Anyway, so he's like, faith is a house with many rooms. And then Rafe Spall chips in, but no room for doubt. And then Pi retorts, "Of course, on every floor. Doubt is useful. It keeps faith in a living thing." And this is like, mate, they're bantering again in metaphor and imagery. It's like, oh, faith is a house. What does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. And it's just so cod. It's so tea towel. I just thought, I can't handle this spiritual drivel.
No, that's fair. I just don't think I approach the films like this in the same way that you do. Like, I'm not expecting it to be life-changing. I'm not expecting it to make total sense or have complete clarity. I would have remembered it if it had a massive impact on my life. I'm not describing it as that. But as I watch it, I, you know me, I love a bit of tone. I'm all about the tone. The filmmakers can get away with like pretty much anything as long as they get a nice tone that I can enjoy. And as long as my, you know, the mood that I'm in at the time sort of, you know, coincidentally meshes with the mood of the film, I sort of don't care if it's like really smart or well written or if there's actual meaning behind the card or if it's just card. I like card. I don't mind. I don't believe in anything. So I'm not sure like what I would be, you know, I can watch like a film that is supposed to be incredibly meaningful and get the same amount out of it as I can get out of this film. Ultimately also, I do the work. The reason I'm upset about his family dying is because I'm doing the work. The film doesn't have to do it for me. It helps if it does, and it, you know, it gets you there quicker. But, you know, there's a bit of an active role to play when you're watching something like this. And I would say it's just about how you approach it, isn't it? Like, I know it's not the best film ever, but I guess what I'm saying is I really enjoyed watching it, and I don't need it to make loads of sense. I don't need it to do anything other than strike the right tone pose for me to enjoy it.
Yeah, that's great. I love that you love this film. I'm not. I don't think you shouldn't. But also, don't blame me for this being a shit film. You're saying
I'm not blaming you.
No. I'm being again facetious. You're sort of saying, oh, you know, I approached this wrong, and therefore it's like no. This film approached me wrong. I didn't do anything wrong. It does have a coherent tone and it sticks to it. There is some Ang Lee. He's no slouch. He can direct a picture.
It looks like, I think it looks great. Sometimes. I'm not talking about the CG stuff, but it's amazing when there's the still ocean, the raft is there, and the stars surround it because they are reflected, like mirrored in the sea. That stuff looks so cool. I think that's, you know, and I didn't like the CG stuff. Didn't really grate on me at all. Like, I don't, you know, I sort of read some reviews of it and you know, read people talking about it. You've mentioned the CG stuff already. It's like, I just don't notice it when I'm watching the film. I can recognise I'm not watching a real orangutan, for example, but I believe the character of the tiger pretty quickly.
Great. I'm not down on it because it uses CGI. I like CGI. There's some the shots that are beautiful in this don't feature a CGI animal. It's just more, this film just throws so much spiritual shit at the wall and hopes some will stick. And, you know, people, it has, and people like it. People want to, it kind of just plays to the cheap seats.
I can't believe you didn't like my 9/11 thing.
I didn't not like it. I'm not.
You shut it down so quickly.
I know I'm not supposed to do that, and I feel guilty. But also, I hate the idea that there's any meaning in that.
I think it's an interesting milestone, and as it applies to the discussion of like cinema and art before and after, this one is oddly placed because obviously it was written before. It was just happened to be released on that day, so it's written at the very end of a world that believes in good.
No. It wasn't written at the very end. It was written. It would have been written. The book was written years before.
Well, the point I'm making is, you know, the book was being written in a time, you know, towards the end of the 90s, at the turn of the millennium, when people believed in stuff and people believed in good and clarity. And, you know, I know that's a sort of simplified retrospective view, but it's undeniable that the way that the way the world internationally is viewed post 9/11 is very, very different to before. And I think the way in which that has impacted art and cinema, specifically for the purposes of this conversation, is really interesting. You know,
well, yeah, you know, it's about religion, suffering, enlightenment through pain. So, yeah, you know, people, I think this kind of story is evergreen. I think it would have been a hit before 9/11, but particularly afterwards, people would have lapped this up. And they're still lapping it up. The film did really well. And then it's on the stage. It's on the bloody West End with puppets. So it's, you know, and 9/11 is you know, it's a stellar memory, but it's a ways back. And it's still cracking in. It's still packing in the crowds. And it's still being milked. This tiger is being milked.
The tiger, okay.
Every last drop. So, yeah, you know, there is something in that. Should we play the box office game?
Yeah, do you want to play the box office game? How much do you think they would have spent on this film? And can you talk to me a little bit about what things would have been expensive in the film?
Well, the special effects would have been very expensive. So, you know, they're spending a lot of money on this film. This is a tentpole picture. So I would say they are spending, back in 2012, somewhere in the region between $150 to $200 million. Oh, let's split the difference. Let's say $150 million.
$150 on the film.
Yeah, yeah, very funny. $150 million.
Well, I can tell you, it was cheaper than that. It was $120 million, hey?
Okay.
Those special effects clearly coming in at sub 30 mil of your predict.
Yeah, that's true. They didn't have to pay any big stars. Rafe Spall would have cost a pretty penny.
I didn't know, until today, that Rafe Spall was called Rafe Spall or was the son of Timothy Spall.
Yeah, I mean, and the things it says about you that you didn't know that is...
What does it say?
It just says you don't have a very inquiring mind.
What? Who is that man that I see in all the films and TV?
Yeah, what's his name and how do I say it and who's he related to?
Right. Yeah, how did he get here? Who's his father? Would you like to hit the gross the opening weekend? The opening weekend, US and Canada. Now, bear in mind the budget was $120 million estimated. What do you think the film took in its opening weekend, US and Canada? This was November the 25th, by the way, of 2012.
Yeah, and I think it would have done well. I'll just say 20 mil. It made 20 mil.
It did 22 and a half. Pretty good opening weekend, I assume.
Yeah.
Yes.
Very, very solid.
Now, we've got gross US and Canada. We've also got gross worldwide. I think let's just go with the gross worldwide game for now. And again, that's a 120 mil budget, 22 and a half mil opening weekend. Very strong. What do you think the gross worldwide of this movie was?
Well, I think the book is very... It's one of those books that would have done very well globally.
Yes.
It's got great cred. The brand awareness of this book,
yeah,
is going to be high.
And the 3D thing was really, like, it was exciting for people at the time, wasn't it? It was being talked about as a sort of a spectacle to view. As a marker, I think we said last week when we looked at Castaway that did something like 400, 450 gross worldwide. That might be a good marker for you.
Oh, spoiler alert. And also, you know, you've got Ang Lee, prestige director. And then I think it did Boffo box office. I think it would have beaten Castaway. I'm going to say 600.
Mr. Richmond, $609 million gross worldwide.
That's made my week.
I mean, you have got that rock on, haven't you? You're rock hard on that.
Better than Castaway?
I don't know how to answer that question. All I can say is I enjoy it more than when I watch Castaway. I mean, it's not dissimilar, you know, for obvious reasons, but also, you know, you've got the kind of, but the boat crash and the versus the plane crash. I know you haven't seen the film, but you experience the plane crash alongside Hanks. And don't love that bit, mainly because I'm afraid of dying in a plane. Also, don't love the boat bit because I'm afraid of drowning in a boat. Upsides for Pi, his family die on the boat. Hanks's family, they're not on the plane. So there's that. In the immediate aftermath of the plane crash in Castaway, you don't really care about the other people on the plane. They were nobody people. Yeah, they were nothing characters, not important to you. So all you're really sad about is that he's trapped on this island. And of course, he's not floating in a boat either, at least in that part of the film. He's on an island. And I like this one more. I think I like it more, but it could be recency bias, and it doesn't mean it's a better film. And I wish I could ask you the same question, but inexplicably, you haven't seen the film Castaway.
No, and I don't get bogged down with saying, oh, this film's better than that film. I imagine Castaway is probably about as good as this.
It is good.
Yeah, but that's me saying it's probably, they're both kind of a bit shit. entertaining, but of no consequence.
Sure. There's a bit in Castaway where Tom Hanks has to, you know, there's a bit more of the realness. I mean, obviously you have the character of Wilson in Castaway, who is a soccer ball that has Tom Hanks' bloody hand on it, so he creates a little face out of that.
Sorry, a soccer ball.
A soccer ball, yes.
You what?
What are you saying? What would you prefer me to say? Huh? A football.
Yeah, I just would like you to use the right word.
Well, sure, but I mean, if I, you know, it's an American film, if I'd said football, you may have had in your mind a football, an American football.
No, because you would say he had an American football, because that's called an American football. It's not called, they call it an American football. The game's called American football. The ball is called an American football. We're English. It's a football.
In America, they just call it football.
Yeah, but we're not in America.
But we're in podcast land. Podcast land is very international. I think it's fine to be clear, isn't it? Are you actually upset, or is this part of your character? Did it irritate you in real life that I said that?
Yeah.
Did it really? You don't even really like football.
No, but the fact that you would fawn over the Americans and use their language, it's just like...
I mean, soccer is an English word. They call it soccer in Ireland. Like, we invented the word soccer. That's what it used to be called before we changed it to football.
Fine, but we call it football now, and it's called a football. All right, we don't call it soccer. And again, we're not. I'm not Irish, and nor are you. I mean, you've got Irish.
I am Irish. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay. Well, mate, you should call it soccer all the time then.
Okay.
Knock yourself out.
Is it okay? Yeah, because of my heritage, that I call it a soccer ball.
Yeah, that's not cultural appropriation.
But I have to say a soccer ball.
Yeah, I'll allow that. That's fine.
Okay, that's good to clear up. Thank you. Well, anyway, Wilson, of course, a soccer ball with a bloody-handed face on it. You have the element of fantasy there because he's talking to a thing that isn't real, but it's all cast in the very brutal, real reality world real, where there's no sort of escaping that. Every stage of the way in Castaway is just another like real world gritty brutal problem to be solved. So I very much prefer Life of Pi because all of the actual real things that happen, for example, the Gerard Depardieu killing and eating a sailor. That's done through the fantasy of animals and Mother Nature, so it doesn't force you to watch the real thing. You know, I preferred watching that.
Isn't Wilson a volleyball?
That's very possible. Yeah, it is possible that the soccer ball football fiasco wasn't even necessary.
Yeah, I will watch Castaway at some point. I prefer there's a film called All Is Lost, starring Robert Redford. And that's about a guy who gets capsized in a boat, and it's all just Redford, and it's all problem solving, but it's all in the water.
Yes.
That's just a bit more serious and a bit more grown up. But yeah, anyway, that's that. Are we all done?
Oh, wait, you were going to ask me a thing.
Who would you ideally want to spend the, like, if it's just a man in a boat surviving?
Well, the person I would watch in a boat for 2 hours, maybe even more, I might watch this person in a boat for 8 hours, is Dev Patel, who I think has grown into a truly wonderful actor.
He's good. Have you seen him in The Green Knight?
I really love that. I think that might be my favourite film of last year. I loved that film.
It's a great line in that where she gives him a hand shandy and then she says, "You're no knight," after he's spilt his beans. That is the best bit.
Why did that resonate with you?
Because I'm no knight.
Right. And what do you think that means? There's quite a lot of symbolism in that, isn't there? Do you think that's throwing hand shandies at a wall and seeing what sticks? Or what does that mean to you?
I don't know. I agree with the choice. I was a bit disappointed by that film. I think if I'd seen it in the cinema, I would have liked it a lot more. But yeah, no, it's a good shout. He's really great. And I can't really think of anyone I would like to spend an entire film just on a boat with.
I can think of someone I wouldn't.
Yeah.
My mind just went to Chris Pratt.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. He's not going to, he's going to get very tiresome.
Yeah.
He is in a similar sort of film, but in space, called Passengers.
Oh, yeah.
You are just with him for the first 35 minutes.
Well, no, because you've got Michael Sheen as well.
He comes, yeah, sort of, no, that's a robot. Yeah. So he's the kind of Wilson character.
Sure.
But yeah, okay. All right, you want to split hairs and be a prick.
He's a pretty advanced Wilson, isn't he?
Yeah, but it is still ostensibly Pratt, and then he wakes up Lawrence.
That's true.
In a massively rapey way.
That is bad in that film, isn't it? Can I say quickly as well, when I was thinking about Chris Pratt, I realised that Guardians of the Galaxy was released in 2014, which was really only 2 years after Life of Pi, and that doesn't feel like that at all in my head.
Great. A great insight into how time passes in your head. Tell me more.
Okay,
yeah, enough of that. No, that was good, actually. I'm glad you made me play that game.
Anything off the trolley, dears?
Let's finish the podcast with the last game where you I've read out, I think I've accidentally read out all the films, but at the end of every episode someone will read out a list of films to try and catch out the other person with the film that they forgot. Today, this week, it's Joe's turn to read out films and see if he can catch me out and pick next week's episode.
Yes, I will. I've got quite a long list now.
You need a long list, mate, for me.
Yeah, I know I do. And it's quite annoying that there's a few films on here that are being sort of referenced or are coming into the ether throughout our discussions already. So, for example, I had written down Slumdog Millionaire, which I had forgotten existed. But I obviously, given that we've spoken about Dev Patel, I don't think that one's going to fly, is it?
It's forgettable, but I haven't forgot it because there's a great scene with a spoon and some eyes that I think keeps that film alive.
Right. I have absolutely no memory of it whatsoever.
It's a very good shout, but yeah, your dev... You know what? You should have just said it and I might have let you have that.
Really?
But, yeah.
But now we can't.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Well, I know you probably won't have forgotten The Assassination of Jesse James, because I imagine you like that film.
Yeah, it's in my top 20. That's a fantastic film.
Okay. Here's a film that you may or may not have forgotten. Up a Hill, Down a Mountain.
Never seen it.
Okay, well, that doesn't count then. Do you know what that is?
I know it doesn't count.
I'm telling the listener, not you, I'm letting the listeners know that one doesn't count there. Up a Hill, Down a Mountain is a film with Hugh Grant in which he is an official mountain measurer and he goes to a town in Wales and he apparently the town is just a couple of metres shy of officially being a mountain. But then he does that thing where, you know, like what the tax collector does in Darling Buds of May, where he fucks someone from the village and then he helps them carry dirt up there to make it tall enough.
Yeah, that film's called The Englishman Who Went Up a Hill and Came Down a Mountain.
Yes, that one, yeah.
Yeah, you've called it the American name. You love Americans today.
I think it's like just what the internet told me it was called.
Yeah, that would be Americans. The film wasn't called that.
Do you know, I've got a Portuguese friend who I was going to visit a couple of weeks ago, and the night before I went, I was teasing him a little bit on, we were chatting on a voice call. I was using Google Translate and then using the listen function to hear what I was trying to say so I could just mimic it and say it back to him. And he became incredibly frustrated, not just because he was talking to me and I'm annoying, but because he said everything I was saying was in Brazilian Portuguese. And I hadn't ever clicked until that point. It makes complete sense to me now that Google does this exactly the same thing it would do for Americans and American English, as it does for Brazilian Portuguese and Portugal, because there are, you know, how many hundreds of millions of people live in Brazil versus the relatively small population of Portugal.
You tell me, yeah.
Interesting exactly. That they would have a similar, I didn't never thought of that. And I assume with Spain, it's the same, right?
I mean, you're so bloody annoying. How have you got any friends?
The film Detroit.
You don't have to preface with each of this by going, the film. I know they're all films. The name of the podcast is Films You Forgot.
I thought you might have thought when you said, how have you got any friends? I was saying Detroit, that would be an answer to that. And you would, that's why I prefaced. But the film Detroit.
No, that's fairly recent and I have got no interest in watching it and didn't watch it. And I would have remembered it because it's very, very recent.
Okay. Border.
No, you're not going to have that.
I can't have that.
No, because I remember it. I didn't really like it.
Okay. And you don't want to watch it. No, that's fine.
Definitely don't want to rewatch it.
Okay, fine.
I thought it was stupid.
Willow.
No, I've watched that was a very much a childhood staple. I'd love to rewatch it, but can't have it. Didn't forget it.
The Recruit.
With Colin Farrell.
Yes. And Al Pacino. Oh, diggity, I think I've got him.
Do you know what? I don't think he can have that one.
What?
I've watched it last year on the telly.
Oh.
And it's too...
Boy, I am going to run out of films. Okay.
Okay, tell you what, look, if we run out of films, we'll come back and do The Recruit.
Yeah, okay,
because
fine.
You're nearly there, but... It's too silly and fun for me to really fully forget. But
I'll
allow it if you run out.
Okay.
I thought you said you had a long list. This is like
it is long,
films.
But I'm realizing now that I've actually used this before. Munich.
No. You can't have that.
Okay.
It's good. Solid little picture.
Deuce Bigalow, the male gigolo.
I haven't forgot that I've seen that. I don't know anything. I couldn't tell you a joke, but
no,
yeah. And I'm also not going to watch that again.
No, fine. Well, that counts. The Adjustment Bureau with Matt Damon.
Yeah, okay. You can have that, I suppose.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you can have that.
I left it so late because I didn't want to watch it. But, oh man, I'm going to have to get a longer list. That's good. No, that's fine. Let's do the Adjustment Bureau. I think I like to embrace the idea that it's good sometimes if I don't want to watch the film because, you know, it'll change my approach. With this film, I was very excited to watch Life of Pi. I was glad that you chose that or that was on your list because I was excited to see it. I genuinely had forgotten that and, you know, I was looking forward to it. I won't look forward to what did I just say?
The Adjustment Bureau.
I won't look forward to it, but then it'll give the next podcast a bit of edge, won't it? A bit of toxic edge.
You know what? It's my recollection is it's perfectly fine and a bit dull, and it's not Blades of Glory, for God's sake.
No,
but it might be long.
That's also my recollection.
It might be longer than Blades of Glory, which is a shame. And it is, it's right in that forgettable film wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's us all done. We will be back with the Adjustment Bureau and, that's me. I've been your host, Adam Richmond, and, he's been Joe Devine.
Thank you.